Welcome to Disruptive Successor, a show for next generation leaders in family businesses and entrepreneurs who want to disrupt the status quo and take their existing business to a whole new level. We all know that what got us here isn't going to get us there. This show will provide inspiration, advice, and resources to help you create massive impact.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Hi, it's Jonathan Goldhill, and welcome back to another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show. And today I have Scott Drake, social entrepreneur, leadership training innovator. Scott is the founder and executive director at Jump Coach, a social enterprise on a mission to make best-in-class leadership training available to everyone who needs it. Scott's journey into leadership was long, painful, and he made every mistake in the book. It took him 10 years to thrive as a leader and not feel like an imposter. When he became a leader of leaders, he saw next generation leaders making the same mistakes and having the same struggles. Selfishly, he couldn't spend 10 years watching new leaders wreck his teams while they figured out how to lead. So he began searching for a faster way to teach leadership. That search turned into a five-year research project and the innovations that are now Jump Coach. Prior to Jump Coach, Scott was Vice President of Technology for Medical Education Disruptor, ScholarRx, and his 25-year career includes stops at Microsoft in Redmond, Washington, and startups in Silicon Valley. Scott, what a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Hey, John, thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
All right. So I think this is really interesting because, you know, you and I are both passionate about leaders. We are working a lot with next generation leaders. We're intimately familiar with the types of tools that our clients may be using, like Scaling Up, Vern Harnish, Rockefeller Habits, and Gino Wickman's EOS Traction. And yet neither of those books or systems really talk about leadership very much, and they don't have a prescribed development path for leaders. So I'm really interested. But where I want to start today is, you went and did 5 years of research on leadership. I mean, you must have had a lot of free time to bankroll that. But I'm really more interested in, what did you study? How did you do it?
Well, so it wasn't my full time job. It was my passion project.
Okay.
And so I didn't have to bankroll doing nothing else for 5 years. But no.
Okay.
What I was curious about is leadership is just this nebulous, confusing, fuzzy thing. Like, what is it? One of my favorite questions to ask is, how do you know you're doing a great job as a leader? And most leaders scratch their head and have a clear answer, right? So really was to understand what is this domain? And then what are all the moving pieces? And then how do you know what's important? Because my mistake was I studied a lot, but I studied the wrong things, right? When I was early on, I needed to really be able to coach problem solving, but I studied entrepreneurial stuff, right? It's really easy to pick the wrong thing. So yeah, what I studied a lot of books. I looked at a bunch of MBA programs, the learning objectives of various classes. What are they actually teaching you and why? Some leadership programs, again, at a graduate level. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of pieced all of that together. Mm-hmm. And from that, I tried to figure out how do I get people into the important stuff first and then, you know, get them in a position that they can kind of grow over time, which is really what you have to do, right? It's you kind of get started, get on your right feet, and then get better over time. That's the
case. Okay, so let's put some framework around this. So sure. I love what you said about it's really fuzzy. I steal a quote from one of my mentors, Dan Murphy, who founded an organization called The Growth Coach. He said something to the effect of leadership is like beauty. you know it when you see it, but it's really hard to define. Mm-hmm. And so there have been people who are experts who have really done a great job at defining leadership. As a matter of fact, I remember distinctly remember walking into a Barnes & Noble store about 20 years ago and looking for a book by John Maxwell and noticing that the entire shelf was John Maxwell books. He had written so many books. And that was always my go-to resource, the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, or because he's such a great storyteller. He was a pastor. He's got a great deep voice. He seemed to own the space of, you know, what is leadership and you know, what is it in a social enterprise, a nonprofit, a church, government, business? What are the, like, who are the other leaders that we should be, leaders of leaders, you know, that train the trainers, like that we should be listening to, or the frameworks or the models?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of people that have been influential for me, but I think what I want to do at this point is really get clear on, when I say leadership, what do I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Let's make it practical. Let's make it tactical. What does it actually mean? And to me, it means working through others to get things done.
Right.
Right. There's things you need to get done in your business, at home, in church, at your civic organization. There's things you need to get done, but you can't do them yourself because you either don't have the ability or the skills,
right,
or the time or the desire or the interest. Right. So you have to work through other people. So it's the ability to work through other people is really what leadership is about.
I agree.
Management is planning and resource management, some of those kinds of things, project management, more management side.
Yep.
And you can do all those things yourself, right? You're not necessarily working through others in that situation, but in leadership, it's the act of working through other people. And I think some of the people that have been really influential for me are Liz Wiseman, mm-hmm. whose book Multipliers.
Yep.
I think she's out of Stanford, has done some fantastic work just around, you know, an A player on one team can be a D player on a different team simply because of the way that the leader interacts with them.
Interesting.
Right? The way the leader acts. So you take, you know, she just had a bunch of stories that she went through and really was able to document that when leaders behave in certain ways, they either make their team smarter or they suck the intelligence out of their team. And there's a lot of things like that. So I think Liz Wiseman's a good one to dig into.
Mm-hmm. Multipliers. Yeah. She's a big thought leader. I've not read her book. So thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend it. Another one I thought was really helpful was Michael Watkins, who did The First 90 Days. This was probably about a 15-year-old book.
Right.
But again, he really broke down the different teams at different states, whether it's a startup or a turnaround or a realignment or an accelerated growth. They all need different things from the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, you know, you have to kind of diagnose, what does your team need from you? How do they need you to show up so that you're putting into the team what they need and you're not sucking out of the team what they, you know, what they don't need. So I think those are the two books that I really recommend every leader start with, is Liz Wiseman's Multiplier and then The First 90 Days by Michael Watkins.
Okay. Before we move on from this subject, Jack Welch, someone to follow, someone not to follow in terms of leadership. I mean, he created a whole training institute. Now that he's passed, I'm not sure if that training institute is still vibrant. I imagine it is, but like he seemed to have imparted a lot in the area of strategy. And he had some very Darwinian leadership philosophies. Do we like him? Don't we like him?
I haven't dug a lot in. So at times I've looked into his stuff and I've just kind of set it aside because I felt like it wasn't applicable today, or it wasn't applicable if you're not GE. Mm-hmm. Like if you're not, you know, a multinational, you know, multi-billion dollar company, is this even relevant to me? Mm-hmm. But I have seen some of his other stuff that I felt like it was. And again, I think the key for modern leadership is compassion, and it's really looking after your people. Like you want your people to want to help you. And you don't do that by paying a little bit more or letting them bring the dog to work. Like you really have to care about your people and make sure that they're getting something out of working with you beyond just the pay and the perks. And so I didn't see a lot of that from some of his stuff, but I did see a little bit of later stuff. So that's typically where I start gauging people. I think Ken Blanchard's done a great job of modernizing what he teaches. Like his original 1 Minute Manager, he completely rewrote, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And he said, don't even pay attention to the old. The old one is old. It doesn't apply to today's world.
Wow.
Look at today's. Yeah. So it's, so I think he's somebody who's again, kind of one of those, long-term people, but I think he's really been able to stay up to date with what he's doing.
Well, I think Jim Collins on his, you know, his concept of level five leadership and Pat Lencioni's contributions to like, what is an ideal team player? Yeah, I'm big fans. I mean, everyone seems to love Lencioni. Everyone wants to read, no one wants to read business books anymore. They just want to read fables. So his stuff has been popular and always comes with a model or framework. He's very smart and puts that together. But I like the whole concept of leaders with humility. I like what you said about compassion. I think you have to have character. There's got to be connection, compassion, all that stuff is really good. So let's talk about some of the common mistakes leaders make that destroy employee engagement. And let's also talk about like what the best leaders do that maybe encourages employee engagement. Can you touch on that?
Yeah, so I think some of the big things that I see a lot is that they don't really understand what motivates people. Like, you know, I think Daniel Pink's another person to really study. He takes motivation back to purpose, growth, and autonomy. Mm-hmm. People work and people give their best effort. People show up at work because there's some purpose bigger than just earning a paycheck or some purpose bigger than making somebody else more money. Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. Do they really care that you're going to make $20 million this year instead of $18 million this year? Most people don't. Right. So there's got to be some purpose to it.
Yeah.
Growth. People want to grow and get better. Right. I want to be better next month and next year than I am today in some way, in some meaningful way to me. I want to keep growing. And then autonomy, people want some control over how they work. They don't want to be told what to do. They want to solve problems, right? So a lot of people, some of the mistakes really spin out of, they don't understand what motivates people. Why are people engaged? Why do people want to help you? And those three things really have to be built into who do you hire? How do you lead them day to day? How do you interact with them? Like, are you dictating exactly what to do? Or are you challenging them with problems? And there's different times that you need to behave in different ways. So that's one thing, is just not even understanding the core of what motivates people.
Yeah.
And then I say the other one that's real big right now is that so much more work, like work used to be very, what was mechanistic, right? Is routine. It's a fast food restaurant where the management puts in place all these systems and processes and the people just come in and they're just clogged. You know, they're just in the machine doing the work, right? And most of that mechanistic work though now is done by computers and robots and systems. And the work of people is very creative. And creative work, you can't measure, you can't manage in that mechanistic way. You have to actually manage for different things. Your goal is not efficiency. Your goal is creativity and innovation, right? Mm-hmm. So many people are still looking at all of management through the lens of efficiency. And they have to shift and start looking at parts of management through efficiency and parts of management through innovation. And you're not going to get good innovation if you try to manage it with the same tools of efficiency. So those are a couple of things that really cause this great resignation that's happening. And some of these other things are really at the core of why a lot of companies are struggling with engagement or struggling with leadership and management, some of those things.
Wow, really interesting. I don't think any of the leadership models that were taught by Maxwell or the names that we just dropped talk about the importance and the role of innovation and creativity. And by the way, so just give a little plug for another episode that's dropping in a week or two prior to this one, is with Dan McClure and Jenny Wild. That's on innovation and creativity and how do we stimulate it. And that might have been the most challenging podcast that I've done to date, because I had to think, like, what do people do to be innovative and how do you measure creativity? It's a hard thing to measure.
It's hard. I come out of the tech world. So I look over a lot of, like, I work with like executive teams looking to hire tech. And they want to treat their tech team like they treat their sales team.
Right.
So sales can be very mechanistic, right? Sales, you can have like, look, you've got to make X outreaches a week. You've got to do this. You got to do that. You have a pipeline people go through, right? Tech largely doesn't work like that. It's basically, I need you to come in and study this segment of my business and figure out what's broken and then figure out what systems make sense and then go find those systems and then hire. You know, I mean, it is truly... There's no week to week, month to month common KPIs that you can attach to some of this creative work.
Right.
But if the only way I can view myself as successful as a business or as an organization is by putting KPIs that are consistent and that I can measure and improve on, if that's the only way you can think of yourself as successful, then you're really going to struggle to manage a creative endeavor. But so much more of work is becoming that creative and innovative sense. You have to learn to think differently.
Well, I can tell you firsthand, I've struggled with coaching leaders, managers who were in tech companies that were having to develop KPIs and ROCs, which are basically, you know, quarterly priorities, and have them be measurable in terms of progress. And I mean, I think there was one company just ended up fighting between two of the leaders as to whether they were using Waterfall or, you know, as a project management system, or Scrum and or Agile. And so they both were kind of fighting and they were disagreeing about it. I'm sure that this is something near and dear to your heart because you grow modern and Agile leaders.
It is. It is. And I can think of my own experience with scaling up coaches saying, Scott, you've got to give me something measurable for this quarter. And I'm like, This quarter, we're going to try to identify the problem. If we get to the end of this quarter and we understand the problem, right, and then next quarter we can get into exploring solutions, then I'm going to be happy. Right. And he couldn't do that. And the CEO couldn't either. He's like, Scott, you got to give me something measurable. And I'm like, If we understand the problem and we're ready to move forward, That's a great quarter. Right. So it is a different way of thinking, but you have to get used to it. And you have to accept that not everything can be predictable. Not everything can be efficient. Not everything can be. And that's the wrong goal. Do you truly want innovation? Then you have to leave some slack. Right. You can't have everything, you know, budgeted precisely to the penny and to the minute and to the hour. You just can't do that with innovative work.
Yeah. You know, I think there's so I work with rising generations, right? The next generation, they're typically 25 to 40 year olds, and they're oftentimes in family businesses. And there's usually a father or mother, oftentimes father, who's actively involved in the business, maybe not so actively involved. And they do things very different. And my job, I find, is to coach the rising generation in how to lead the parent through the transition, the transformation. So they have to be part salesperson, part influencer, part genius, part, you know, a lot of different parts. And the older person, I have to coach to sort of let go, learn how to enjoy life, think about the next chapter. What does that look like? And it's not always easy. I imagine that you deal with this, whether it's in family businesses or in companies where, you know, role players are becoming leaders. What's been your experience in this area?
Yeah. So I think one of the hardest transitions, and I find it, I don't want to generalize this, but I do find it more in especially some of the older generations, and even me, I'm in my early 50s. So, I kind of came up with the idea that the person who gets the role of the boss is the smartest or the most knowledgeable or the most capable, right? So it's your competency that earns you the right to be the boss. But to remain the boss, you have to show that you're the most competent, right? You can't have this young kid come up, this punk kid come up and show me a better way to do it. That would be a threat to my status as the leader of this organization. That's a very antiquated view, right? It made sense 30 years ago, again, in that mechanistic environment.
Yeah.
But now as the leader, my job is to get the best thinking of that punk kid who has a better way to do it. That's great. That's exactly what I want.
Right.
So it's really, you do have to, but you're fighting
with. That means giving up authority, by the way.
Yeah. You're fighting though with decades of training that you want that A+ in school, right? You want to be the MVP on the team. You want to be the person who stands out through your competence, but as a leader, you can't do that anymore. So that is really from a generational standpoint, I think one of the harder things that I've had to try to get people to realize is that you're going to be respected more and appreciated more if you do some other things. Like, and you mentioned a few of them, you know, clarity and compassion, and just really set the table for these people to shine, but get out of their way and let them be the hero of the story. That's really what's going to help them give you the most value to you. So yeah, it's a challenge.
So how do leaders know that they're doing a great job? I mean, can we measure employee engagement? Is it employee net promoter score? What are some of the tools that you think are available and that leaders of of small and medium-sized companies, I mean, companies with 25 to 200 employees, what can they be using to know that they are doing a great job?
So that five-year research project, one of the outputs of that five-year research project is a scorecard.
Okay.
And the scorecard actually gives four goals that leaders have to balance these four goals. Mm-hmm. Different companies are going to balance them in different ways, and you can measure them in different ways, right? There's mm-hmm. no single right way to measure them, but there's four goals that leaders have to balance. And that's to get results, right? That's the obvious, right? The team and the company exists to do something, and it's doing it, and it's doing it well. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. Number two is you have an engaged team. And you can use some things like a net promoter score. You can use things like start, stop, keep surveys, feedbacks, retrospectives, yep. other things. You can look at your retention, other things you can look at to kind of gauge, are you doing a good job with employee Great. Engagement?
I like that.
Customer enthusiasm is a third, mm-hmm. right? Are your customers enthusiastic about you? Are they happy you're on the job? Do they right. Actively refer you to other people? And then the fourth one is, are you creating more leaders? Are you growing mm-hmm. leaders? Or are you growing people?
Right.
So those are the four core goals of leadership.
Are you distinguishing between growing leaders and growing people? Is that a distinction you're making?
I would typically lump growing people into team engagement more than specifically leadership. Leadership, you're trying to build the capability of leadership in your organization.
So creating followership. If you've got followers, then you're a leader.
Followership, but also more leaders. Because again, a lot of companies now, the leadership is a little bit less hierarchical and more team-based. So we spin up a team and I need somebody that can lead that team. And then in 6 or 8 months, we're going to spin that team down and that person is just going to be back to a role player. Mm. I need some flexibility in my organization
right.
to have people who can informally lead better. Right?
Okay, so that suggests that we should hire more from within than try and hire from the outside in that type of scenario where they might go up and then go down. But
I think what I'm getting at is that leadership is a core skill for a lot more people than just managers.
Yeah.
So that's the other piece, like that fourth piece to say, do we have enough leadership talent in the organization to meet our leadership needs from mm-hmm. top to bottom? Right. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the fourth piece. So it's really the other thing I want to say on those four things is different companies are going to balance those in different ways. Right. I worked for a call center with notoriously high turnover. And no matter how much energy they put into to employee enthusiasm, it was still going to be high turnover, right? Mm-hmm. It's just what it is, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
So it didn't make sense as much sense for that company to focus on that as it did, say, my tech companies where I've really got to compete in a market to keep this talent here. So different companies are going to say, look, I'm going to sacrifice results for engagement, or temporarily we're going to sacrifice results to train and to build up our leadership bench. So it's this balancing act that there is no single right balance or right way, but no manager can ignore any of those four. If you're ignoring one of those four, then you're going to struggle in some other way within your organization.
Well, you are really passionate about this and you're dialed in. I love it. So how much of this stuff did you learn at Microsoft?
Not much. Microsoft, I was really early in my career and I was still very much a tech guy at that point. So this is all based on that research.
Gotcha. Awesome. So you talk about one of your questions you wanted me to suggest to pose to you is, why is it essential for leaders to lose the competency war? What does that mean?
So again, it goes back a little bit to often leaders come up through the ranks thinking it is my competence that is going to get me the promotion. And then we step in or we go into a new role and we say, I'm going to start at this new company. I'm getting a brand new team. They don't know me at all. Mm-hmm. And I want to prove to them that I am worthy of being their leader. And the way a lot of us would approach that is we would say, I want to go in and show them I'm competent at their job. I was a great computer programmer. I'm going to go manage a new team of programmers. I want to show them that I can do their job great. Right. So a lot of times we walk into a job saying we want to earn their trust and respect. And we choose to use competency to do it. Yeah. But the problem is that your team is trying to do the same thing. Like the team is getting a new boss. So you are the team's boss and they mm-hmm. want to impress you, right? Mm-hmm. They want to show you how great they are. Mm-hmm. And their toolbox for doing that is also competency. Mm-hmm. They want to show you that I am great at this job. I am great at doing this. So what happens a lot of times is the manager comes in trying to prove their competence and the team is trying to prove their competence. And they end up in a war with each other. Instead of the manager just saying, there's other ways I'm going to build trust with my team other than competence. So I'm going to let them have that, right? I'm going to let them win that battle. And I'm going to give them that. I'm going to let them have that tool because I have other tools that I need to use to build their trust. So it's really big in tech that the manager uses competence in a way that they shouldn't. And it ends up damaging the team and damaging the relationships more than anything.
I can totally see that. So what is the paradigm for how a leadership team can work better together? What are some of the takeaways or suggestions or the mindset that a leader should have to get their team to work better together?
So it goes back to just the basic question I mentioned a few minutes ago, which is how do you know you're doing a good job as a leader? Mm-hmm. So imagine you go to the coaches of the Lakers, mm-hmm. right? And you go to each individual coach and you say, how do you know you're doing a great coach? How do you know this is a great team? How do you know we're doing a great job? And they all had different answers, or, yep. they didn't have any answers at all, right? Mm-hmm. So most leaders and most leadership teams, they don't have a basic answer for that question. And because they don't, they're not on the same page. So leadership teams often are not working together as they think of leadership. Now, they may get their strategy on the same plate or on the same page, or they may get culture on the same page, but they don't view their job day to day as we're trying to get results with an engaged team for enthusiastic customers while creating more leaders. They have different balances, different ways of approaching it. So it's really about, again, I turned a lot of that research into a scorecard that managers can use. That's a simple 10-15 minute tool that'll kind of walk them through and show them some of the nooks and crannies of leadership and show them how to think about leadership. And it's a free tool, and it's a very useful tool for a management team to say, you know, here's how I view it and here's how you view it, or here's where we're strong, here's where I see that we're strong, and here's where I see that we're strong. And it's a good tool for them to just be able to discuss what leadership means and how we can do it better together as a team.
Great. Is that a tool that we can make available to our listeners?
Yeah, it's absolutely. So it's free. It's under, it's on the jumpcoach.com website.
Awesome. So let's talk about how someone can accelerate their growth from a role player to a leader. In the past, I usually would recommend a book or two. These days, getting people to read a book is difficult. So I also used to combine it with a movie, maybe a sound clip or a movie. Lots of different movies come to mind that can teach leadership lessons. What do you, when you're coaching someone, how do you coach them to accelerate their growth? So, you know, thinking of talking to a millennial who's, again, thinking of maybe taking over the family business and needs to step up and be a leader.
Yeah. So the single biggest thing about being a good leader is how you think about it, mm-hmm. right? It's not skills. It's not the scorecard. It's not understanding this. It's not understanding that. It is this idea that my job as a leader is to work through others and is to be more of a facilitator and more of a enabler mm-hmm. than it is to be a doer.
Right.
And so it's really about this mindset change. And that's the very first lesson we teach. We have a training program. The very first lesson is an hour, and that's really all it focuses on. But there's definitely some other things. There's a couple of HBR, Harvard Business Review articles around just that mindset transition. Mm-hmm. Liz Wiseman's book does a good job with that mindset transition. But right. It's really, if you want to accelerate your growth, don't spend a bunch of time reading books. Don't go on some big research project. Just focus on how do you view yourself as successful as a role player, and then recognize that how you view yourself as successful has to change when you go into leadership. And it is truly about working through others and what they get out of it. It's not about keeping your ego attached to your greatness at your craft, right? My ego was very attached to being a great computer programmer.
Yeah.
And that made me a terrible manager.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So my ego is very attached to being a perfectionist, and that's a terrible leadership trait.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, but you have to get past that. And that doesn't take coaching can help that.
Yes.
The right training can help that. Mentorship can help that. Observing yourself and journaling, like just really, one of the things I coach people to do is just look at your interactions of the day, mm-hmm. specifically around delegating or coaching problem solving, or when somebody shares an idea, like you're going to see all the problems, mm-hmm. but it's not good to state those problems, right? So just look at your interactions of the day and think about it from the other person's perspective and what they wanted to get out of it. And just the act of journaling for a period of weeks can help, people see themselves through a little bit different set of eyes sometimes. So there's a lot of different techniques along that line.
I think it's really great. And I totally agree with you. When I started as a coach, I didn't know anything about business coaching. I was a consultant for many years, probably 13 years. And I was given a book by Dan Murphy, Becoming a Strategic Business Owner. And I was trained in the strategic mindset thinking process. And what it was is it really took the concepts from The E-Myth, which was a very popular best-selling book about how the myth of the E stood for entrepreneur, and the myth was that most small business owners are business owners by default, not by design. And they're mostly a technician, a small bit of manager, and even less entrepreneur. And so, you know, most small business owners, he said, don't work because of that. So this book was really all about the mindset of getting people to think more like a strategic business owner, an entrepreneur, as opposed to a small business owner by default. And I thought that was really powerful. And that's why they called it the strategic mindset, and the certification of the coaching organization was in the strategic mindset. And I thought, this is really a lot of fluff at first. You know, I came out of business school and learned all this technical stuff, and like, you know, where's the McKinsey Boston Consulting Group model that we can apply to small businesses? And I was like, no. Most small business owners are small because they think small. And so we've got to get them thinking big. And I think by analogy, or the same thing is true of leadership. I think we're not born leaders. We're not born salespeople. We might have some tendencies or proclivities or maybe some natural gifted abilities in that area, but they are learned, they are developed, they are practiced. These are behaviors, and they come more naturally to some than others. But I totally agree with what you're saying.
Yeah. One thing I want to build on there is the idea that you can understand intellectually that my job is to not be the technician anymore. My job is to be the entrepreneur. My job is to be the leader. You can understand that intellectually, but in the moments that matter, like your team brings you a problem and I can see a solution for it. Mm-hmm. And I know that they're going to go spend another day on it and they might finally get to it, but I can give them a solution right now. And my instinct is to give them the solution. But what happens is that's going to destroy their ownership of it. That's going to take away their motivation to do it, right? And as a leader, you have to emotionally be able to step back and say, it's more important for them to get this win for themselves than it is for me to jump in and be the technician, right? Yeah. So it's the ability to recognize your own emotions and then stop yourself when you're about to do yourself harm and you don't realize you're doing it, right? So that's why you hear people talk a lot about emotional intelligence and why it's so important for leaders. And that's why we can all understand intellectually how to play this game, but in the moments that matter, when it comes time to do it, we often fall back on those emotions and we make those mistakes.
Yeah. So I recently came out of a leadership retreat that I was facilitating with a client. And it was my feeling that the leader was kind of dominating the meeting, and that there were lots of interruptions. And when the leader had to leave the room, which he did on a number and various occasions, that kind of everything halted. This was reinforced recently when we did a weekly leadership meeting, and all the issues on the issue board were things that couldn't be solved with him. So at the end of that retreat, I said, hey, you know, this has been great. Why don't we pick a book to read? And I suggested that they read The Four Obsessions of an Extraordinary Executive, which is written by Pat Lencioni. People love reading fables. There's a model at the end. His model is first, build a cohesive leadership team. Second, create clarity. Third, over-communicate that clarity. And fourth, reinforce that clarity. And it was interesting. His response was, hey, that's a great book. We read that all as a team a few years ago, and we really got a lot out of it. Maybe we should read that again. And I thought to myself, yeah, he got the 2, 3, and 4, create clarity, over-communicate clarity, reinforce clarity, but he didn't get the build a cohesive leadership team part. And so, you know, it was interesting. Do you find that when you're coaching leaders, that they're somewhat recalcitrant, some of them, like they learn something, they understand it intellectually, but then they don't really embody it. And it's, we have to go back to some of the basics.
It is. And I think the other thing I want to throw out there is that nobody is perfect. Nobody can be perfect, and nobody will ever be perfect.
Right.
So I think we have to have a little bit of a grace, a little bit of patience with each other as leaders. Right. But yes, absolutely. Yeah, I've sat through those meetings where, and I've been in companies where it's like, okay, we can have this meeting, but the CEO won't be here. And we're just going to have this meeting again when he's available. So let's just cancel it, because there's no sense having this meeting because we can't do anything. Right. So, and we would have those kind of conversations with, you know, the CEO, like, hey, this is $1,000 problem. Why are you wasting your time on this? This is not important for you. But he would be so obsessed with all the minutiae happening in the company that he couldn't help himself. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's really, yeah, I've dealt with that. And I think, you know, for me, you know, it's just continue to, it's a practice. It's something you're working on over time. It's things that you're working to get better, but it goes back to that. You can understand this intellectually, but then in the moments that matter, it's truly in those moments that matter where you have to be able to recognize that this emotion I feel, or this, there's something drawing me to want to do something that even if intellectually I know I shouldn't do it, I still want to do it. Right. And it's that self-control. And it's just something we all have to keep working on.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's really tough.
I agree. Scott, what's a client, a case, something you're working on that you think is really interesting and instructive to our listeners to, you know, that you'd like to share?
I mean, where I really enjoy stepping in, or where I enjoy is, you know, a lot of scaling companies, a lot of growing companies that are, a lot of times you'll have a founder who's building out maybe the second tier of management, or even the later stage of their first tier of management, where they're really trying to say, you know, how do we bring some cohesiveness to our leadership team? Mm-hmm. I really enjoy kind of coaching in those situations. And it's fun to me to work with, you know, some younger leaders and coaching them and really being able to see them get that this is not an intellectual, this is not something I have to master intellectually or skill-wise, that this is something I have to master emotionally. And then also seeing them apply that to their real world, to the world outside of work. I mean, you know, so it's like, you know, I have one lady I was coaching who was really struggling with her boss two levels up. And some of the techniques that she started using with him, you know, just as far as making sure he feels like his needs are met before you start trying to get your needs, but just some basic stuff like that. Mm-hmm. She was having some challenge with her mother-in-law, and she started using those same techniques on her to make sure that she was kind of felt heard and taken care of and those kinds of things. And it just really improved her relationship in her family. So it's just some of those things that apply to work also can apply to home. And those are some of the fun things that that you kind of get to see when you can work with a range of people, you know, on some of these issues and some of these challenges.
Do you find that all this leadership coaching is done one-on-one, or are you doing some in groups? Does that become more like a workshop and like a seminar? What are you finding are effective modalities beyond the one-on-one?
To me, the way you really need to learn leadership is that it's over a period of time.
Right.
I don't think a 2-day workshop for some tactical stuff, like if I'm going to teach you how to hire and we're going to sit down and we're going to work on job descriptions, we're going to work on position descriptions, you know, those types of things can be a good workshop.
Sure.
But leadership is a broad topic to me. Is best done in bursts, and is best done with repetition over time, with some periods of reflection and interaction in between. So I think, you know, the training that we offer is basically three lessons within 9 developmental assignments that go with them. So, you know, you would spend basically an hour or two a week on mm-hmm. different components, and you can do that self-paced, fully self-paced, which is really the way it was engineered and designed to be done, as a self-paced tool, mm-hmm. not something that you actually had to work through with a coach. But yeah, we do some individual coaching. I've done some group coaching in the past. The problem is that people tend to not take group coaching as seriously as they take one-on-one coaching.
Yeah, I agree. So
I've really struggled with that. I think I've offered it within some companies. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, you know, you have to make sure your people show up and that they care and they realize it's for them. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times when it's a group, they don't feel quite as personally attached to it. So it can vary. But I think, again, I think it's the most important thing is not going to be a workshop. It's not going to be, you're not going to read one book. It's something that you're going to want to work on a series of things over time and get better over time with it.
Gotcha. So you have an on-demand training for leaders at all levels. It's called yep. Leadership Accelerator Program, yep. and they can find it at jumpcoach.com.
Yep. Right.
And you say it's three modules, like, what did you say? How many lessons?
Yeah, so it's three lessons. The lessons are, there's the mindset lesson, which we really do distill down how do you have to think differently as a leader than as a role player? Mm-hmm. And it's a little over an hour, that lesson. Mm-hmm. Then there's three development assignments to go with that, which is emotional intelligence, growth mindset, and then personal strengths and weaknesses. Just recognizing the areas where maybe you want to go big, but then the areas where you're going to let other people shine. What are the areas you're going to let other people take the lead, right? So it's those three development assignments go with that. And then we have a scorecard lesson, which really breaks down our scorecard, which is 4 goals and 9 jobs. Here's how to know, you know, here's the nooks and crannies of leadership. Here's how to know you're doing a good job and where to focus your attention. Mm-hmm. And then the third lesson is what we call wayfinding, which is basically a continuous self-improvement process. So how do you every quarter be more strategic instead of just reading this book because your teammates are reading it? What's really the right training that you need to take the next step for you? Or to solve your challenges or whatever. So it's really a much more strategic, continuous self-improvement process is that third lesson as well.
I love it. And yeah. The tagline is become a complete leader in weeks, not years. Yeah. And it's only $97. So easy price point for someone to get started. And they can also go to the same website and get a hold of the leadership scorecard. Yep. And it looks like it's interactive. Yep. It's great stuff.
Thanks.
Yeah.
It's been fun to put together. It's been fun to put together. And again, I put this together to solve the problem for my own team.
Yeah.
Right. So it's been fun to go out and see it at work in other teams as well.
Fantastic. Yeah. Scott, so is that the best way for people to find out about you and your company is go to jumpcoach.com and connect with you on LinkedIn, I suppose, as well.
Yep.
Okay. Scott Drake. So easy to find. You say you have your business is a social enterprise. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So the price point's $100 for that, right. For that lesson. We actually give that away for free. If somebody emailed me and they said, Scott, I can't afford $100. I'm a nonprofit. I'm a student, whatever. We'll just give it to them for free.
I saw that.
I'm experimenting with just having a free version, you know, a community version versus a business version. So we're experimenting some of the different directions, but the idea is just that profit isn't our only driver, mm-hmm. right? We have to be profitable. We can't, you know, this isn't a nonprofit. This isn't, you know, purely a passion project in that way. It has to be profitable, but our goal is really to have some social impact as well. We're just trying to strip away as many barriers as we can to keep people from becoming the leaders that their team needs them to be.
Well, I think it's really important for leaders also to take an active role in their communities. Now, some choose to go the route of being on Lions Clubs and Rotarians or Rotary Clubs and Chambers of Commerce. But those are great. Mm-hmm. I really encourage my clients to get involved in some kind of philanthropy or stewardship. I think one is it probably helps you to have more of an abundant mindset when you contribute to others. Two, I want to work with clients who are aligned with my same values, which is about giving, sharing, paying it forward. So one thing I do is I donate 5% of my clients' coaching fees to an organization in their name of their choosing. And we do this once a year and around between Thanksgiving and Christmas. So I think it's really important. And I think social enterprises are really important. So I'm all about what you're doing. I really support the values behind it. And I love the message that you shared today.
Yeah, well, thanks. I appreciate that very much.
All right. Folks, if you enjoyed this lesson that we learned on leadership with Scott Drake, please share it with others and make it a great day. This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, the Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple. To guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at the goldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session.
Thank you for joining us on the Disruptive Successor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, review, and share with a friend who would benefit from the message. If you're interested in picking up a copy of my book, Disruptive Successor, go to disruptivesuccessor.com.